นะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะพุทธังธัมมังสังฆังนะมะสามิSo it's so. Can you hear me in the back, Rhoda? All right. Can you hear me in the back, Rhoda?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, very good. It's very nice to be back. After I think the last time I was here was 4 years ago in 2008, 4.5 years ago maybe. The ordination of Venerable Chunda. There were some other visiting monks, Ajahn Sona, Ajahn Kusalo, at that time. And then the time before that was in 2001, for just a couple of weeks in the dark and rainy winter time. But Bhayagiri has always been in my consciousness, just because I'm one of the American monks in our community in the world. And this monastery being here in California is, important to me in that way. So I wanted to take the chance to come back to visit and spend some time getting to know the community here, always changing, always growing, and reconnect with Ajahn Pasano, and as it happens, also Ajahn Amaro visiting at the same time. Reconnecting with Ajahn Amaro is less of a stretch because it's only been 1 year. He's the abbot now of Amaravati, and that's where I've been living for the last 5 or 6 years. I started at Amaravati long time ago, it seems, in 89, but I never really left there. I lived there for much longer than 6 months. So it's just been the last 6 years or so. I've been part of the community there, and after 6 years of intense community life, I felt it was suitable to have a break for a year, and so I'm just coming off of a 1 year sabbatical, as we're calling it these days. Sabbatical is a word, of course, used in the academic world, but we're using it now in the monk world. It means time off. And my father, who used to be a professor at the UMass Boston, used to have sabbaticals every 7 years, and you could choose a half year at full pay or a full year at half pay. So I told Ajahn Amaro I wanted a full year at half pay, which of course means half of nothing. So it was a full year, and I'm very grateful. It's about 11 months, actually, into it. I went to Thailand in last December and have spent most of that time on retreat, on my own. And some of that time reconnecting with people I know in Thailand and doing a little bit of teaching here and there. Mostly just giving myself the opportunity to focus on the practice. And the practice, of course, is not limited to the times that we're on retreat. So I'm also focusing on the practice during the times that I'm visiting or reconnecting with people or even teaching. In fact, teaching can be a good time to reconnect and to stay in touch with the practice. But those times when we don't have to do anything at all can be, rare as they are, they become very valuable. So I spent time at the same place where Ajahn Pasano spent his sabbatical, if that's what he called it, a few years ago. A number of, it's a cave, which actually turns out to be two caves, and now two kutis, all to myself, 8 or 9 months, nothing to do but watch the mind. And so this has been a really wonderful opportunity, and I sit here just now with the meditation, a lot of feelings of gratitude coming up, both for the opportunity and for the support that I've come to appreciate so much. And you can feel that that support here at Abhayagiri, the palpable presence of goodwill and a lot of people, both monastic and non-monastic, who value what we're doing in Buddhist practice, all of us, lay and monastic alike, who value that enough to want to put time and energy into creating suitable places and suitable environments for the effort we can each make. And feeling a lot of gratitude for specifically the people in Thailand who supported me this past year. And I found that over the years as a monk, that's one of the things which I've been really sort of, not really surprised, but gladdened to find arises more and more, is this feeling of gratitude, just even to myself for sticking with it for so long, through the ups and the downs, thick and thin, because as things change and time goes on, the circumstances change, the sense of who I am and who I'm with changes, and even sometimes the sense of what it is, you know, to live for me as a monk can change in subtle ways, not in its fundamental nature. But everything changes, perceptions change, and yet sticking with it through thick and thin over the years, there's this sense of thanks for still being in a situation where the main focus, the main point is the practice, the priority is the practice of the Buddha's teaching. And of course, that's not just something that's limited to monks. Any of us, I imagine, any of you, some of you and lay people also have been practicing for many years, maybe even longer than I have, and this gratitude that can come up is something which I found I can sometimes ignore or just not notice. And just by making it conscious, by allowing myself to feel grateful consciously, that's some way that I've found is a great support. And turning the mind towards goodwill, towards thoughts of gratitude, towards thoughts of appreciation and well-wishing, of course, is part of one of the tools that we have in our practice. Using our perceptual abilities, our ability to think consciously, not just to think unconsciously, which we also do a lot, but to think consciously, using thought skillfully to direct the mind and the heart to skillful perceptions, goodwill, well-wishing for others, for all beings, not just human beings, and also towards ourselves. You know, the practice of metta, bhavana, or loving kindness practice can be one which is taught in a formal way. And there are great advantages I think many of us can find in using the formal teachings for various meditation practices like metta. There are benefits in using the formal practices in a formal sort of structured way. But also finding a way for each one of us to just get in touch with the principle. You know, what is metta? What is loving kindness? What is goodwill? Getting in touch for ourselves in our own way, discovering that each one of us. How, you know, I might have an idea of what feeling loving kindness feels like, or what a monk with metta is like. You might have an idea what you with metta are like based on past experience and memory. But rather than that, always coming into the present moment as we experience it and getting in touch with how things are right now in a way which is coming from a place of goodwill, of well-wishing, of care. And loving kindness is often translated as unconditional love, no conditions. So that means myself just as I am right now. Not the good me or the me I take sides with against the me I wish wasn't there. Not the good stuff against the bad stuff. But just as I am, just as I experience myself to be, accepting completely myself as I am. And this is something which I think each of us can benefit from being conscious about, whether or not we use formal structured meditation techniques to reach it, because there's so much judgment and discrimination and intolerance in the world. It gets internalized by each of us all over the place now, not just in the discriminatory Western so-called cultures where we really learn to discriminate between this and that, and this one's better than that, and there's great value in all of that. Not just the Judeo-Christian cultures that perhaps some of us have a background in, a very judgmental universe in terms of the metaphysical context that we grow up with, even if we're not going to church or taught religious beliefs. We learn to judge ourselves. We learn from being with people who judge themselves and being with people who judge us, seeing other people judge others. It's really rampant now throughout our culture, and it's around the world, all over the world. Maybe it's always been that way, but certainly more than ever that I've seen, it's like an affliction, like a disease that we have, always measuring ourselves up against how we wish ourselves to be, how we think we should be. And so the shoulds and the shouldn'ts are often a constant underlying theme, like a drumbeat that we don't hear unless we turn our attention towards it and allow ourselves to be conscious of it. I should, I shouldn't, I shouldn't, I should. There was one monk who rather cheekily used to say we have to stop shoulding on ourselves. It's true, we're constantly shoulding on ourselves. Should, shouldn't, shouldn't. Many of us, most of us, perhaps all of us. It's not always the same for everyone. There's a story that I remember. It's one of these stories that's probably been told many times, and I've just heard the 16th version of it. But it was in Boston, where I come from, one of the centers in Cambridge. I guess it must have been, it was before the Cambridge Meditation Center was started officially, Cambridge Insight Meditation, but I believe it was somewhere in Cambridge, if not at IMS, when Mahasi Sayadaw, the great Burmese master, was visiting Massachusetts. And he was doing a session with the people there. Again, in my memory, the way the story was told to me, it's all these super educated Harvard and MIT type Cambridge people. And they were asking questions of Mahasi Sayadaw through a Burmese translator. And one of the questions was, you know, how do you deal with self-hatred? Which, of course, is just an extreme form of self-criticism. And the Burmese translator asked for a little clarification, and then he translated to Mahasi Sayadaw. Mahasi Sayadaw asked the Burmese translator another question, and Burmese translator clarified a little bit. And then Mahasi Sayadaw again paused maybe and then asked again for more clarification. They went back and forth a few times. And finally the answer came, which was, this is a rare mental state that can sometimes come up in the mind, just more practice is necessary. In other words, he didn't know what it was like to have self-hatred or extreme self-criticism, and he hadn't really heard of that before from the people he'd worked with in Burma. So all of us have different things to work with, but these days I'd say most of us have the shoulds and the shouldn'ts as a sort of underlying chemical milieu, the sort of context in which we're working, the vibration that underlies a lot of our experience of ourselves, our perceptions of ourselves and others, is one of judgment. And so just becoming conscious of that can be the first step in accepting ourselves as we are. Because it's not accepting ourselves as we think ourselves to be or as we perceive ourselves to be, but what am I right now? And so really to have metta starts from this place of being willing to accept, just willing to care. Willingness is enough, really, because we can't necessarily feel the feelings of caring that we wish to feel. We can't feel metta if we don't feel what we think is metta. But we can orient ourselves, we can approach ourselves with an attitude of caring. So it's a subtle difference, perhaps, to hear it put that way. But it's an important one, at least in my experience, which is to come at myself in this moment now from a place of acceptance, rather than looking for those metta feelings and trying to generate them. Judging myself for not having metta and then trying to practice metta so I have it. And this is really a way of allowing the mind to settle in itself so that we can begin to see what's there. And it's not just a sort of secondary add-on to the real practice, which might be how we view vipassana or panya, wisdom, looking into the causes of suffering and seeing the causes of suffering for what they are. Yes, that is the heart of the practice, but when we cannot really accept what's there, then there's a lot of what is actually present in the present moment that we are not seeing. So I found it useful myself just to turn the mind in ways which are skillful towards my experience of myself as I am right now. And that, of course, then means just this, in this moment, not necessarily my idea of who I am. That's changed many times over the years. My idea of who I am right now, me, Jayanto Bhikkhu, visiting Abhayagiri after my sabbatical year, is very different than my idea of me, Jayanto Bhikkhu, 10 years ago, when I was visiting Abhayagiri for the first time. Or even me, Jayanto Bhikkhu, last year, when I was leaving for my sabbatical. Or even me, Jayanto Bhikkhu, last week, when I was leaving Bangkok. It changes and changes for each one of us. And if we watch and see, it's not something that we can really put much faith or trust in, even though perhaps we do more than we need to. So being able to accept ourselves, myself, as I am right now in this moment, is one way of beginning to allow myself to release, you know, the need to have a secure self-image. And just trust in this moment, whatever is present. And a lot of the practice that I found most beneficial over the years has come down to that, a sense of acceptance and trust with sati, mindfulness, awareness, in the present moment, without trying to change it. And so that doesn't mean I don't try to develop certain practices which are skillful, like concentration techniques, which each of us will need along the lines in order just to be able to see what's happening. And so, of course, then the times that we have when we come to a monastery, or lucky times that I've had this past year, all these months of retreat, or maybe a retreat you go to, or for the monastic community here, the times that you have which are very free of other responsibilities, these are valuable times where we can apply ourselves to developing certain concentration practices, certain techniques which are very valuable and beneficial and skillful. And they support the cultivation and the arising of wisdom, in my experience. But all of those, in the end, for me, they feel to be adjuncts to a kind of practice which is one that relies on the ordinary, not trying to change things, but one which comes into contact with things as they are in any particular moment, and trusts that to be enough, so that we can see just a little bit more clearly each moment and stay with the watching, the knowing, in a way where the mind is a little bit more steady and more centered and a little bit deeper, a little bit truly more accepting. And seeing then where there is some judgment, where there is a should or a shouldn't, where I'm taking a sides with something or against something else, where there is holding, where there is I want, I don't want, I want, I don't want, which of course in the end is the core of it for each one of us, whether we're monk or layperson or man or woman, any being, whatever being we are, we're human beings, and so we're very lucky in that we can watch in this way and see for ourselves the trap that we can discover we're caught in of I want, I don't want, I want, I don't want. How do we release ourselves from that trap? Yes, the practice is specifically to develop certain qualities like concentration, deep concentration sometimes are useful, perhaps for some of us necessary ways of seeing how we are caught. In the end, it comes down to whatever we're doing, those formal practices or informal ways that we learn to practice, it comes down to a kind of awareness which is intrinsic to the mind's, the nature of the mind. And probably this is what brings each of us to a practice in Buddhism. Being interested in all of this, you know, wearing these strange clothing we wear, shaving our heads, chanting these ancient Pali words together, bowing to, it's not a golden image in this case, it's a dark image, metal image. We do these things, we have these traditions and ceremonies and practices, perhaps because each one of us has had for ourselves a taste of something which is deeper and possible, and which can lead to a freedom of the heart, not dependent on a religion, not dependent on getting something from outside, but which is already there as a possibility for any of us inside. So reliance on the ordinary in my practice has been really a key, almost even using that as a... talking with Venerable Kemiko yesterday, he was asking me if that's been a mantra. I haven't quite used it in the sense of walking around, sweeping, just saying to myself, ordinary, 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 in the way that the forest monks often do use the mantra, Buddho, 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 Buddho. But you could use the word ordinary in the sense of not needing to change, a way of helping the mind be with what actually is, rather than look for what we imagine could be or should be. And that sense of comparing what is to what I thought it was going to be, or what I wish it were, or what I expected it to be, what I want. This comparing that's often going on is very closely linked, isn't it, to the judging, the shoulds and the shouldn'ts. So both awareness practice, keeping it in the present moment with the ordinary, with this moment as it is now, as well as practicing metta, you know, loving kindness in this way of accepting and caring for myself as I am now, is a way of seeing this kind of comparing which often goes on. How I should be, you know, often, especially in America, I think it's part of the dynamic of suffering that all human beings are afflicted with. But particularly, perhaps in America, we're a particularly idealistic culture, and so many of us are trained to try to develop ourselves by becoming the person I think I should be, the person I think I can be. Be all that you can be. I don't know if they still have that on television, but when I was growing up, we saw those commercials for it's the army or the military or whatever it is. But that was the way that I'd really grown up, not even knowing that there was other ways to approach it, thinking that's the way to develop. And so if I think that being a grounded person, not too much in my thoughts, and a kind person is good, and that's what I believe in, and that's what I want to be, well, then I just believe that I am that way. I am that way. Maybe I'm particularly I grew up particularly idealistic in a sort of crazy way, and maybe other people weren't afflicted this way, but I really did learn to see it, especially coming into the Sangha in Europe, where they aren't as idealistic. They have their own ways of suffering with this same basic problem. But I remember telling a monk when I first came in, and I was in Anagarika, and I'd had a very good first winter retreat in some kind of very good meditation, most of the retreat. Coming out of the retreat with the busyness, the usual mind states arose. And I complained to this monk, or rather sort of apologized in an embarrassed way to this monk, that, you know, I'm not usually like this. I'm just thinking so much right now. I'm in my head so much. I'm usually really grounded. And he said, well, maybe, you know, you were always like this, but just now with the meditation, you're starting to see what was always there. And I said, I'm never, maybe, you know, and he said, you know, being in your head like this. And I said, I'm never in my head. And at that moment, I knew I'm always in my head. Always. And I'd never seen it before. I'd been walking around with an idea of how I was because of what I respected, what I envisioned, what I wanted myself to be. So just being able to see what's there is, of course, a fundamental of the practice, cultivating mindfulness so that we can see what's there. And it's not necessarily so pretty. It can feel like you're going backwards. At first, it felt for 3 years that I was getting worse and worse as I practiced, much worse than when I came in to become a monk. And I think there are different reasons for that. Partly it was, yes, seeing what was there that I hadn't seen before. Partly, perhaps, it's that when you put yourself into a situation where suddenly there's renunciation involved, you get your buttons pushed in ways that they didn't get pushed before, and you see where the cracks are. And that's one of the purposes, of course, for renunciation. It's not only to make your life more simple. It's in order to sort of increase the pressure, to turn up the volume a bit, so that the vessel that you have, you can find out, are there cracks? Does it leak? When we can just do whatever we want to do, it's very easy to distract ourselves from noticing any sorts of faults, from the places where we get caught, from kilesa. And when we put ourselves into it voluntarily, into a straitjacket, and you can't go to the fridge when you want a snack, and you can't just go to a movie when you want to, just when you're starting to feel uncomfortable, and you can't get away from this person you would never choose to live with if you ever had your own choice. You know, you have to live with people you wouldn't choose to live with necessarily. You have to do things you wouldn't choose to do. And for those of you practicing as lay people, taking on the 8 precepts like you did tonight, if you choose to take on some of the renunciatory practices that are offered in the Buddha's teaching, then you also see in the same way. You run up against a boundary. And so it gives you the opportunity to actually see what's there. So for the younger members of the community here, I would just encourage you to continue to stick with it because it is worth it. And to not think that it's going wrong if you feel like you're getting worse or if you see yourself in ways you didn't want to see yourself. To just take it one moment at a time and stay with the knowing of this moment. And then again, another moment comes and you stay with the knowing of this moment. Not thinking too much of yourself as me, so-and-so, Bhikkhu, or Anagarika, so-and-so, who is like this now and hopefully will become like that in the future. Such thoughts will arise. Of course, we all have them. It's natural. We need them to navigate through life. But just to notice them for what they are, they're just thoughts arising now in this present moment. And what's really happening is this moment. What can we notice? And so the practices, the teachings that the Buddha gave give us ways of approaching this moment which can break through that old, learned, conditioned way of experiencing ourselves in the world. We can see it. There's so many different teachings. And using, for instance, the teachings on the 5 khandhas, to see our experience now, not just in terms of me, Jayanto Bhikkhu, giving a talk at a Bhaiagiri 2013, 2012, da 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 da. But to notice that in this moment, it feels like this. There's a body which feels like this, this body, rupa, form. It has heat and movement and cold, solidity, liquid, different feelings. There's the feelings themselves of all the different senses. So my sight, my hearing, my smell, the feelings in my body, taste, and all that my mind does with that mental sense is the sixth sense in Buddhism, just like the other five. They all have subtle feelings of it's pleasant or unpleasant. Some of the feeling in the body is good, most of it is neutral, some of it's not so good. Maybe our self-perception right now, I have a perception of myself which is mixed. Some of it's good, some of it's not good. If we're saying I should, I should, I shouldn't, I shouldn't, there's often an unpleasant mental sensation going on. Just noticing right now what's happening in the mind and noticing it in terms of vedana or feeling, unpleasant thoughts. It's an unpleasant sensation of thought, or it's a pleasant sensation of thought. I love to be here. I feel good. I feel good about the community. I feel good about myself. That's pleasant. It's often very neutral, neither. Looking at what's happening in this moment in terms of sankhara and sanya. So sanya, perception, just labeling what we sense. You know, what tells me that I'm looking at a group of people? I'm looking at tanyatiko and tanpurunadamo and tansanyamo and so on. My perception, sanya, labels the colors and light that I see through my eyes and says that's a person and then that's so-and-so. And then sankhara comes in with all of the memories and everything I can build on top of that and proliferate. Well, that's so-and-so and I really like so-and-so and I'm really happy and I hope I get to talk to him. And last time we talked, we didn't get to that. And Bhayagiri Monastery, I love being here. And the weather's great. And last time the weather wasn't great. And I wonder how long the... And so sankhara, which includes so many things, mental formations, is how we build the world. My whole sense of myself has changed again and again over the years. But really, just each moment, it's rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, and vijnana, consciousness of the different senses going on. So my sight, sound that I'm hearing, feelings in the body, the taste, the smell, and everything my mind makes out of that. Mano vijnana. So using the different teachings of the Buddha in a very practical way, without thinking about it, not as an intellectual exercise, not using your thoughts to think about sankhara, but using mindfulness of the present moment and noticing the present moment in terms of sanya, sankhara, vedana, rupa, vijnana, the five khandhas, can be a way out of my world with all my struggles and my problems and my need to develop and my need to let go of that which afflicts me. Just this moment, always just this moment now, it gives us a doorway into a different way of being with this moment. So that we can start to notice more, you know, that which notices the awareness of this moment as sanya, sankhara, vedana. Well, there's always the awareness of this moment, and trusting that more and more instead of trusting my perception of who I am, my feelings about myself, my feelings about everybody else, but the trust, the ground starting to shift more and more into the knowing of what I'm experiencing, all these perceptions of this moment, then the knowing itself becomes something I recognize more and more easily and trust more and more. And when we do that, I think each of us can see that it becomes more possible then to let go, to just keep our hands off of those very deep-rooted attachments that we don't even see normally, that we're clinging to, perceptions of who I am and how I am and what I want, what I need, the wants, The I want, I don't want, I want, I don't want. It's very hard to see that. So we have the concentration exercises to help us see in subtle and deep ways. And yet, there's always the possibility to cultivate this recognition of awareness and staying with that awareness as we recognize it more and more. We don't have to be concentrated to notice that we're aware. We can be just as aware of an unconcentrated mind as we are aware of a concentrated mind. So once we start to trust and become familiar with awareness itself as a sort of heart of our experience, it becomes less important what our mental state is. Is it happy? Is it sad? It's not as threatening when it's sad, and it's not as much of a big deal when it's happy. Just pleasant or unpleasant as a sensation. Is it concentrated or is it all scattered? Well, that can matter a lot, especially at first. But once we start to trust the awareness enough that it can become more and more continuous, even that becomes less important, because a continuous awareness is a certain type of samadhi, you'd say, whether or not we'd use the English word concentration, because a concentrated mind can be seen with awareness, as I say, just as an unconcentrated mind can be. And that awareness itself is always the same. It doesn't change. It's not time-bound. It's not an it. It's nothing we can hold on to. At first it seems like some kind of me behind the me that I'm watching. You know, this kind of me, the awareness, rather than me, the perception of me, and suddenly now I identify with my awareness more. But even that becomes seen for what it is after a while, and there's nothing left that you can hold on to, except you can trust in a way where we can let go more and more of that which pushes and pulls us through our lives. And that's something which is always available. You know, it's not necessarily dependent on being in a cave for 8 months in Thailand or having an extra long or extra, in quotes, good winter retreat at Abhayagiri, or a long spell as a layperson at the monastery or in a retreat. It's always at the heart. Wherever we are, we can always be aware. And I found that taking this practice of just ordinary experience, this moment, and then this moment, one moment at a time, is a way to give a kind of ground that we can rely on and doesn't depend on the conditions so much. So we can depend more and more on our practice. And we don't have to hope and wish that someday we'll become the kind of practitioner or the kind of free person that we wish ourselves to be. We stop shooting on ourselves in this present moment and we trust. So those are a few words of reflection tonight. I'm very grateful again to be here at Abhayagiri, and unbelievably happy to be back in America. It's interesting, the perception of America that you get when you don't live in America, even for an American. It's this kind of dread of coming back to the States. And every time I come back, I'm pleasantly surprised by, actually, this is quite nice. And so thank you for listening.